love that music too.
I love that music.
It sounds sort of, I think it sounds like PG-13.
Yeah, not our music. PG-13 music.
I kind of want to go
stick with my girlfriend. Yes, hello, hello, hello. Welcome to Sunday's night, Life with the Girlfriends with Christine Marie and Julie.
And hi there.
That's Christine Marie.
Yeah, and I'm so happy to say hello to Massachusetts tonight.
Yes.
They're joining us.
Well, you know, Massachusetts. You know, I love Massachusetts. Woohoo! So thank you for joining us online and live on FM. Woohoo! As our Life with the Girlfriend show grows, we're so excited. And it's so great. We have a great show tonight because we're talking about one of our favorite topics tonight. We've got two great topics.
Yeah, but this first topic is so close to our hearts. And we just say, I hope there's no tears shed tonight because we just lost our Molly Marie a couple of weeks ago. She was 14 years old. And it was, obviously she was older, but it was unexpected. So,
yes.
But we are total animal lovers.
Yeah.
And so this will be a fascinating show for me and a heartwarming one as well.
So, yeah, we're talking for the first half hour, we're talking all about dogs and this great book,
yes.
Romancing the Dog.
That's
the
great
struggle, I know, The Struggle to Make a Pound Dog Happy in Beverly Hills.
Pound Puppy.
Yes.
Pound Puppy Happy.
I know, it's so great. And, well, you know, it's really, I love this because it's written by a person who writes screenplays. And she's done writing in Hollywood. And I'm like, you know, of course she has. With a cute title like that for a book, how could it not be? You know, Romance and the Dog. And we're going to talk about how, you know, the great things that how a dog can positively change your life. And I'm going to say make your life a little crazy, too.
Oh, yeah.
Huh, Mama? We had two border collies for a long, long time. And it was just crazy, but I'm going to bring Marion on right now. Our first guest is Marion Zola. Marion, are you there?
I am.
Welcome, Marion.
Welcome to Life with the Girlfriends, Marion. And you are the author of Romancing the Dog, The Struggle to Make a Pound Dog Happy in Beverly Hills, or Pound Puppy. I want to say puppy. I want to say Pound Puppy, too. But,
no,
you know,
he wasn't a puppy when I got him, but he was a wonderful dog. I'm so sorry about your dog that you lost.
Oh, thank you so
thank
much.
You know,
but I always tell people it's better that we outlive them than they outlive us.
Absolutely.
You know what? That is such a good point to make because, you know, if you when you're a dog person, you're like, I'm just not sure my Molly, who was kind of crabby in the end, I don't know how she would do without somebody else taking care of her.
Oh, that's so true.
You know, I just don't know. So, you know, Marion, first of all, I don't even have to ask you what your inspiration was for writing this book because I know the inspiration, but how did it turn out, you know, as a writer, you're like, I got to write this book. Why did you have to write this book?
It was really my obituary to my dog, Chips. We had such an intimate and wonderful, unique relationship, and I thought it would be a story that other people could relate to, and apparently they are enjoying it. It's a memoir. It's about my husband and I and how we were affected by this wonderful creature that we just God placed in our path. And we were so lucky to have him and vice versa, I hope. And I just wanted people to know a little bit more about us and the dog and hopefully be encouraged never to buy a dog but to go and adopt one because there are so many fabulous, fantastic, and healthy animals waiting to be adopted who desperately need homes. There is no reason to ever go buy one, especially from a pet store where they come from puppy mills, which are the most horrific places in the world.
Absolutely.
I know we have, we ended up getting two border collies, Marion, and we knew the person, we knew the breeder. She was one of our neighbors. We live out in the country. She was one of our neighbors.
Right.
So we felt really comfortable buying two border collies from her, but we knew that, oh, you know what, I would buy from a pound, from our animal shelter, our no-kill animal shelter. And
you know, our book is called The Clutterfly Effect, and it just came out last month. But we support Granny Rose Animal Shelter, which is
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, and it's a local animal shelter, and no kill. And we every week we'll bring by supplies or, bleach and food for the animals. And just this last time we were there, Marion, a couple was adopting a dog, and they had brought a truck, and they put him in the back seat, and he was just beyond happy. And one of the volunteer workers came out to say goodbye, and he just licked her face, and it was I couldn't hardly take it. The emotion was so good. This dog was so happy. He was going home with this young couple,
sure.
and his little volunteer person was saying goodbye, and it was just like, oh my gosh, if that isn't what the true meaning of adopting a pound puppy is,
right,
or a dog is
and
about.
A lot of people don't know that you can get really just about any breed you want, mm-hmm, because each breed has its own rescue group, and if you go to petsavers.com, you can just put in the breed you're interested in. If you're interested in a mixed breed, of course, there are tons of those. And Pet Finder, I'm sorry, not Pet Saver, PetFinder.com. Mm. You can
Pet
put in whatever breed you're interested in, and they'll tell you where they all are. I know in Los Angeles we have Boxer Rescue, German Shepherd Rescue, and almost every other breed rescue. But you can usually find any breed you want. You're not going to find probably a Labradoodle, but what is a Labradoodle? It's just a mix of two other breeds. Why people are paying thousands of dollars for these dogs when you've got the same thing at the shelters and rescue groups?
Yeah. Well, I know why, because you just want to say the name Labradoodle. That's the
right,
only thing I can say.
Right. That's a good reason, right?
But it can't be any funnier or cuter than saying your dog, because it looks like your dog was a Shih Tzu. Was your dog a Shih Tzu?
No. He turned out to, we thought he was a mutt, which is what we wanted, but he turned out to be a Tibetan Terrier.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Which have become much more popular in the last few years.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so cute, because on your website, RomancingTheDog.com, you can go there and you can see a picture of Chips. I'm assuming that's a picture of Chips, but he's got a little red bow on.
It is.
And
it certainly is.
I just love it, because when we had our border collies, we used to put their little bandanas on. I don't know why bandanas are the typical, border collie, costume or accessory.
Right.
But that was what it was.
Well, they're just very sporting.
Yes, it is.
When you throw that frisbee.
Yes, exactly.
You know, what's so funny is, one of our vehicles, Marion, is a van. And the reason we have it is because we had two dogs, and they would, they'd want to stretch out and they would not stay at home. They had to go everywhere
of
with
course.
This van if we just, ran down to the thing. And people would go like, why do you have this big van? I'm like, well, we have two dogs in the back. People just didn't understand that. Well, we have to have this for these dogs to be content and comfortable,
Right,
and,
right.
And
do you,
all
you
the
have
different
one
things.
Left?
We have no, we lost one about a year and a half ago, and then we lost, or a year ago, and we lost our other one
just a couple weeks ago.
And it was so interesting, and the lovelies out there know, as we lost our second one, I have grieved the loss of the first one over again, because now I don't have the remembrance of him. So,
of course.
It's just like the end of an era for us.
Yes.
Absolutely.
And so I want to know for you, when you first brought Chips home, how was that for you, that first month with a brand new dog living in your house?
Well, it was just like a mother with a new baby. I was so anxious that he be happy and make sure I did all the right things, and we just tried to find out what would make him comfortable, and he was very skinny, so we were intent on making sure he had enough to eat, and he would gobble down the food so fast when we first got him that he would throw up immediately. The rescue lady told us that some dogs do better with their food raised, and so we immediately elevated his food onto three big telephone directories, and he stopped having the problem.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So after that, we bought him his own little raised dining room table, you know, one of these little stands with the bowls in it.
Yeah,
and
those are cute.
He never had that problem again.
It's interesting how just tweaking one thing can really change your life and the life of a dog. That's
absolutely.
You know, and I want to say to all the lovelies out there, if you have a dog that lives in your house, you know what we're all going through because there is that bond that you have when your dog is part of your daily life and all the time. And it's like, you know, it's different when you have an outside dog, which, in, you know, back in the day I used to have an outside dog. And it was different. They would just kind of take care of themselves. You'd have water and food, and we'd go for walks, but they were outside dogs. And it's interesting how times have changed, because I think there are very few now.
I can't even imagine.
No.
I hope so. I hope there are very few.
Me too.
Me too. I really do think as we evolve as dog owners and lovers, things just evolve with us. And so where we might have had an outside dog previously, you know, now it's like, now you just have an inside dog, and they go everywhere with you, and they're just content. They're just happy to be with you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That's all they want.
Exactly.
They just want to be with their human.
You know, I wanted to ask this question, because this idea about having a dog and how it can kind of, like, you know, make your social life better. So if you're somebody out there, you know, tell us more about that, because I know there's probably going, you know, a dog is just going to hamper my life. No. Doesn't have to.
No, I met so many more men and women with the dog. The men, for the most part, were wasted on me, as I'm married, but some of the women became friends, and one man I met introduced me to his wife, and my husband and I became their friends and still are.
Nice.
People just talk to you when you have a dog, especially if you have a nice dog. They want to interact, or they want to stop for a minute and ask you a question. It's just so easy to meet people. And I remember the first time my husband ever walked the dog, he came back and he said, "Why didn't you tell me about this when I was single? I met so many women. They just got crazy over him."
It's so true. And as we, you know, people are like, "Oh, should I get a dog?" You know, if we're open to expansion, it really can open up avenues of meeting new people.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at a festival yesterday, and it was so cute because there was a woman there with a brand new puppy. And the puppy was totally asleep in her arms and got wiped out, but everybody was coming to her. "Can I pet your puppy? Can I?" You know,
love animals. And, you know,
exactly.
We were talking to some friends of ours whose daughter recently got divorced, and she said, "Don't you know anybody to introduce my daughter to?" And I said, "You know, the best thing she can do, she has a beautiful dog. Tell her to go to the dog park. She'll meet all kinds of people. Tell her to go to, a sporting event or anything where she can bring the dog and meet lots of people who are involved with their dogs. You go to a park on a weekend, people are there, they're throwing frisbees, they're interacting with their dogs. It's much easier to meet people. You don't need to do the old, can I have your number? You can just start talking to people."
Absolutely. Yeah. I know our Charlie Ray, he's the one that passed away about a year and a half ago. But if I would always sit in the passenger side, and as soon as the driver, whether it be Julie or my husband, you know, got out, he would jump into that seat, and people would go, "Oh, look who's driving." And he was so darling. He had one black eye and one white eye.
Aww.
And then the white eye had a black ear, and the black ear had had the white eye, or, you know, vice versa. And he was just so, like, I would see older people just sort of walking by, kind of in their thoughts or whatever, and then they'd look up and they'd notice him and they'd smile.
Yes.
That was, I thought, this dog is an angel, because he just, by just looking at him, it brought just a smile to your face. It made your heart lighter. It made your cares just go away for that second. And I met more people, Mary, in that way. You know, I'm waiting in the van or whatever, and they go, "Oh, what's your doggie's name?" You know, all that stuff, who I never would have met before.
Exactly. Dogs do that. They really enlarge our circle, and they also make you live in the moment, because that's all they know, is how to be happy at the moment. And it forces you to live more in the moment, which is, of course, what all the gurus tell us to do.
Yes. Absolutely.
And I think they lower your blood pressure, too. I think when you're stressed out, if you have, if you're, you know, taking care of your dog, like you said,
right.
It brings you right in the moment. And I think there's actually been a study done. Don't quote me.
What'd you say?
I think there's been a scientific study done on this.
Oh, okay.
But don't quote me on it.
Well, you know about the studies with the people in the nursing homes. When they have a dog or a cat present, it cut down on the medications tremendously. They said that people were 80% down on their medications in the homes that had animals.
What a great relationship. I mean, to have and to foster in your life. I mean, that's pretty darn cool. You know, so what three things should you do on a daily basis with your dog?
Okay. Three things I think everybody should do with their dogs on a daily basis. One is to talk to him or her.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to them, because what they crave is attention. And just the act of talking to them makes them feel included, makes them feel you're giving them attention. You would be amazed at how many words they do understand. They understand more than you think. And even if they don't understand what you're talking about, they understand the tone. And it's a form of one-on-one attention that will make them very, very happy. I was amazed that after talking to my dog for a while, I could see that he understood. He understood so many words that I would never have thought he did. But it was very obvious, because I'd tell him to do something and he'd do it.
Mm-hmm.
The second thing is play with them, even if it's only a few minutes.
Yeah.
Again, that's the individual attention they're looking for. And the third thing I always recommend is to either wash or wipe off the paws when they come in, because people don't realize the amount of, at least in these areas where I live, there are a lot of pesticides and fertilizers. And, you know, the dogs will walk and go on other people's grass, and they pick up these chemicals. Then they come in and they lick their paws.
Oh.
And that is one of the reasons I am sure that there are such high cancer rates amongst dogs today, which they didn't have many years ago.
So it is very important
to either wash or at least wipe off with a wet cloth or a baby wipe or something your dog's paws. And, you know, one of the foremost allergists, veterinary allergists out here, told us to do that with our dog who did have allergies. And the most frequent common complaint to vets today is, my dog is scratching and biting.
Yeah.
People complain about these allergies, and I tell you, there's a huge improvement if you clean their paws. So that is something.
Well, I hope everyone out there is listening to this, because that's a simple thing to do. And now that you're saying that, I realize that it's so important.
It is. And it really is.
Oh, you don't want them to suffer at all.
My dog. And, of course, if it's a long-haired dog or one who sheds a lot, brushing would help every day if you can.
Well, I bet by doing that, too, brushing and washing their paws, it really gets them used to being, for lack of a better word, manhandled. So that when they go to the vet,
that's right.
They're not so like, hey, who's touching my feet?
You know? Well, the funny thing is, when we first started doing this with the dog, I would actually sit down on the floor, because he was a long-haired dog, and he had huge paws with lots of hair, and he'd pick up a burr or a worm or something. So I actually would sit down with a bowl of water, and when we got back from our morning walk, where there was a lot of wetness from sprinklers and so on, I would say, come on, we got to wash the footsies. And he would reluctantly come in. And then I washed his paws, and I just dunk one in each bowl. And as soon as one bowl got dirty, I got another bowl. I usually was a two-bowl job. And I got so efficient at it, it took me less than 60 seconds. When we got done, he must have realized that his paws felt better because after a while, he was kind of waiting for it. And, you know, he would lie down and stick his four paws in the air for me to attend to them. It was really funny.
Oh, no.
It was really so funny.
That's darling.
Yes.
Are you, Marion, are you still out in Beverly Hills, the area?
I am.
Do you ever see Mr. Jiggy? That's on the Housewives of Beverly Hills. Lisa Vanderpump?
Have you ever seen her
doggy?
Never seen that show.
I'm just too busy to watch it. The Housewives.
Are you writing another movie, or is Romancing
well,
the Dog?
Well, no, I just got done co-producing a show called Shelter Me, which is about wonderful show about shelter dogs. Which is playing around the country on PBS. You can go to
shelter.tv
to see the schedule. And the first episode was about two groups, one called Pets for Vets and another one which trains dogs for handicapped people. And it's about taking dogs right from the shelter and making them into service dogs for vets with PTSD and who are in wheelchairs, and that's how incredible these dogs are. And it's all about how they were trained and so on. But these dogs came straight from the shelter. And the second episode is about, same thing, dogs from the shelter who were taken and trained to be search and rescue dogs, and also people who own shelter dogs who take them to hospitals to visit patients.
Well, you know, Marion, we took our Charlie Ray to a nursing home because my mom was in a nursing home for many years, and so they just got used to Charlie Ray. And it was so funny because he was a ball dog. He loved balls. And so people would like, oh, I don't want this ball, and they would throw it. He thought, oh, my God, this is great, you know, and he'd go get it, and then he'd bring it back to him, and they'd go, oh, what's this ball, you know. And they must have loved it. Oh, they did, and he loved them. I mean, he looked so proud, and his tail would just go back and forth. He was, to me, a real people dog, you're right. The work that these dogs do, and sometimes when there's that one commercial where that big dog, he sees his owner, the girl coming back from Iraq or something. Have you ever seen that commercial?
I'm not sure I did. What is it for?
It's really for dog food, but the commercial itself is there's this big dog and his master, she's a girl, and she's, I guess, been away in Iraq or something, and she comes home and he hasn't seen her in a year or so, and he just runs out of the house and just jumps on her. He's this great big dog, and they roll around on the ground, and she's in her kind of camouflage uniform or whatever. And my eyes just tear every time I see that commercial. But
I haven't seen it. I want to see it.
Oh, I hope that you get a chance to, because it's just, I don't know. I think we're, you know, pet lovers are just a breed of our own. And you're right. We can talk to anybody. If I know that you love it, that you love dogs, or, you know, love an animal, and you know, they touch your heart and soul, and you're not abusive. In fact, you're just the other way. I mean, I see you as a good person. You know, I want to be in your energy. You know, I think our Molly Marie was like an energy dog. Like, she, you know, just having her be in the room made you sort of calmer. You know,
right. That's what dogs do for us.
Yeah.
Or they get us out of a funk and get us moving.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's exactly, and that's all part about living in the moment. And when we meet somebody who cares for their dog, we know that they have compassion and they have an open heart.
Yes.
And those are good qualities in people that we want to be around. And so living in the moment, having those compassionate qualities, people.
And Marion, if you ever need any us to, you know, do our social media or whatever if you're doing any more co-producing on any of those documentaries for the, just let us know if we can help you in any way possible, because
thank you.
You got a friend here in Life with the Girlfriends.
Thank you so much.
And where can we find your book? I know we can find it on romancingthedog.com.
Oh, you can
That's
find
your website.
It pretty much anywhere. You can order it from a bookstore. You can get it on Amazon, on Barnes & Noble, both websites. You can get it
Great.
From really any place you can get any other book. If the bookstore doesn't have it, they can order it. And it's also sells for the Kindle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Or the Nook. You know, it's an e-book
absolutely.
As well as a paperback.
I would love to have you do this as a screenplay. Are you still thinking about doing screenplays?
I don't know. It's a it's a very personal story. It would be difficult, I think. Just as Marley and Me, the movie really wasn't as good as the book, because in the
That's
book
true.
You have what went on in their minds and in their lives. It wasn't quite, what the book was.
That's not an
easy thing to do.
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
And you don't have the dog,
No.
No.
And to have one dog behave exactly like the other is not a simple thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's true.
Marian,
before
you go, can you just give us one cute thing Chips used to do that just, would just tear at your heart?
Oh, he did something very funny. He would sit next to my husband during meals, and, he wanted him to give him whatever he was eating. And if he didn't, he would just grab his napkin and run away with it.
And no.
He was kidding around.
It's so
funny.
True. Like Charlie Ray, it's like they never met a plate of people food they didn't love.
Oh, absolutely. And another funny thing he would do, if I were in bed at night and reading a magazine, a newspaper, a book, whatever, he'd come right up, put his paws over what I'm reading, and look at me like, forget about this. What about me?
Oh, my gosh.
I love it. That's so great. That's so great.
Oh, what a guy.
That's just awesome.
He was a terrific dog.
Oh, yeah. It sounds like a dog of a lifetime. And I don't know if you're open yet. I know we all have to go through grieving processes, but are you thinking about getting a new dog in the future?
Oh, yes. We will do that very shortly.
Oh, good, good. Well, thank you, Marian. Marian Zola, she is the author of Romancing the Dog, A Shelter Dog. It's all about, the struggle to make a pound dog happier in Beverly Hills. Awesome, awesome, awesome.
But Romancing the Dog.
Romancing
you must
the dog.
Get it. You can get it in any bookstore. You can get
Amazon.
It in the Kindle, the Nook. But you've got to get this.
And what a great summer read, huh?
Oh, absolutely.
For all the dog lovers
so
out
much,
there.
Thank you so much, ladies.
Thank you
so much. I really
thank
enjoyed
you, Marian.
Hearing
it was
you.
Such a delight and pleasure to have you. God bless you.
Oh,
you
what a great, great
bye
interview.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Ah, I love it. I love it. I love it. What a great, great, we're dog lovers.
Absolutely.
And I was reminded about how Charlie Ray, Molly Marie was a great dog, but she was a dog.
Mm-hmm.
She was a dog.
Mm-hmm.
And Charlie stole her thunder in a lot of ways because he had the spotlight on him a lot.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember Charlie Ray, he taught us one day that he could just run and get the newspaper.
I know.
And then
tell that story.
Well, I don't know how it happened, but one day I would go, we'd go out together, we'd get the newspaper, and he'd grab it from my hand, and he'd run in the house one day. I'm like, oh, that's crazy. The next day, he ran a little ahead of me, jumped up, grabbed the newspaper, and ran back to the house. Like, hey, look, I beat you to it. And then finally it just became like this. I opened the door, he would run out, grab the newspaper, come back in.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting it out of the mailbox.
Out of the mailbox,
yeah.
Exactly. And I remember one time we were walking, and he had gotten this, this little tiny stick for me to throw. I mean, it was a little stick. And I'm like, this is going to break. And I said, Charlie, get a bigger stick. And he dropped the stick, and he ran and got a bigger one. And he was a dog that would go to the top of the stairs and roll down the ball.
Yes.
And, for an hour, he
yes.
would just say, I remember we would read at the bottom of the
yes.
steps while we were throwing the ball to Charlie Ray at the top.
Yes.
Really, our lives before they passed, was all about managing border collies.
Right.
That was basically
But the time I remember was that he was running to the mailbox to get the paper, and a car thought that he was actually going to run out into the
yes.
street. and they you know, slammed on their brakes, and he just like, what? And stopped and went to the mailbox and
yeah,
got
like,
the paper and went back, like, what, you know, I don't know what you're doing, but I'm getting the paper.
Yeah.
You know?
I can run fast, really fast, and then stop really quick too, guys. So, but, so, you know, it's great reminiscing about our dogs. I love dogs so much.
Mm-hmm.
I can't wait. I can wait for another one because
yes.
I feel like
yes.
I need to have some other things going on in our my life for a little bit of time.
Mm-hmm.
But I will create more space in a little bit, I'm sure.
So anyway, we were talking about Charlie Ray, but now we could talk about Gladys.
Yes. smooth, Mama. Smooth.
Would that be a smooth segue?
Smooth transition, because we're bringing up another cool author.
Oh, can we say how much we love this person?
Sure, go for it.
I love Marilyn Suttle. I love her.
I love her, too. I love her last name, Suttle.
Yes.
She's a subtle, you know, but let's just face it. She, you know, what she brings to the conversation is not subtle at all. She's like, I'm right there.
Mm-hmm.
I'm right there for you, bringing it all to the thing. You know, that's who she is. That's who she is.
Let's bring her on, Julie.
I'm going to bring her on. Marilyn, are you there?
I am here.
Okay.
Yay.
Before you start talking, let me just tell everybody how awesome you are, okay? You know,
oh, I guess so.
Marilyn, she's an international conference speaker, communication expert, and the best-selling author of Who's Your Gladys? Woohoo! How to Turn Even the Most Difficult Customer into Your Biggest Fan. She's been a business owner for over 20 years, and you may have seen her offer this cool expert advice on TV news or at national print like Ladies Home Journal, Woman's World, or Inc. magazine. And Marilyn specializes in creating subtle shifts. That's why I like her name so much, the subtle shifts, in the way people think and act to produce breakthrough results. How cool. And, of course, her website is marilynsuttle.com. Marilyn, welcome to Life with the Girlfriends. We're
yeah,
so
I
happy to have you on the show.
She's one cool
Ooh,
person.
I'm excited to be here with the girlfriends.
Yeah, there you go. She is one cool person. She is one cool. And I love the name of the book, Who's Your Gladys? Woohoo! I love that. And so we were talking about, like, well, what should we talk about? Because
there's so much,
much
that
you know.
This woman can talk about.
Yes, and we want to talk about how to soothe yourself when dealing with difficult people. And I want to get into this because, you know, your book is about how to turn a difficult customer into your biggest fan. And I think I was a difficult customer a while ago, not by choice, but just because I ended up doing, I will tell you a quick story, Marilyn, and I ended up having to soothe myself because I'm like, this person is not giving me any customer service, and I'm just feeling really frustrated right now. So I had to soothe myself. So I was at a bank and having to do a transaction, but it was at a different bank than I usually go to, same branch, so forth. And this woman asked for my ID, and I'm like, okay, no problem. But I think I sighed because I've been sighing a lot lately, taking big, deep breaths to calm myself. And my license just happened to fly out of my wallet, totally accidental. And she took that as offensive.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know what? I'm not going to wait on you. And I was like, holy cow, you're kidding me. I go, I'm like a long-term member of this bank. She goes, no, I'm not going to wait on you. I'm like, oh, my gosh. And I remember going, okay, how are you going to handle this, Julie? I go, I'm going to just try and soothe myself.
Hot fudge sundae?
Yeah. I'm going to just read and think of all cool stuff and feel gratitude. Like, isn't it awesome to have a bank that I could go to even? So today we're going to talk about how to soothe yourself when dealing with difficult people. And I can't wait to start diving into this thing. So,
your example is absolutely spot on, too. I love it because, you know, maybe one of the other things to soothe yourself is I always have a choice to change banks if I want to.
Yes.
That's right.
I do.
Right.
And gratefully, that was not my right branch, because if that was my typical branch, I would have been like, you know what? This is not right.
I have to. I'm gonna narc on you just a little bit, Julie.
Oh, sure, good.
Because Julie had been when this happened. She'd been just going through this kind of like heavy sigh period,
yeah,
and I had asked her like, are you okay? What's going on? Something? And she's like, no, I'm just really trying to get into the zone. So I understood what she was doing, but if I hadn't been, I might have taken it like. And then, you know, wow, how long is this line, you know?
Right.
So I'm working on that now, Marilyn. I'm working on that.
And, you know, as a customer, we should have a little bit better service. You know, she was obviously not skilled. But I'll give you two quick hints before we even get started, because I think when we deal with this cranky service provider, there's a couple things you could do, and one of them is, I need a hero. I have a problem, and I just need a hero. And it gives them a chance to be the person who says, I hope that hero can be you. And that's disarming. And the other one is, let me tell you how I feel so you can handle me well. I'm not feeling too good. And so you got to tip them off. So there's just a couple of things you could do to manage a cranky service provider. Yes. Or did I do something to upset you? And they're like, oh, no, I'm sorry. I'm just having a bad day. So those are three. I gave you three real quick ones.
You did, yes.
Awesome. And, you know, I also know that you, to say, because you gave me three, love that for you because you're all about expansion, always about giving more. I love that about you. Mm-hmm. So cool. But it's so interesting because when you tell somebody, you know, I'm looking for a hero and maybe that can be you, it really does soften the mood. And I just wrote that down because I'm like, you know, I'm going to use that line this week. I really need a hero. Can you please help me? Can you be my hero today? I would want to be someone's hero. I really
would. Try it at that when you are going on a flight and you've got craziness everywhere and you say that to somebody with your at the ticket counter, they just love you because they're always the villain. So you just give them another role to step into.
Oh, brilliant. That's so true. You know, today I was dealing with someone who was, well, yesterday too, kind of a close person who was kind of been in like an upset, kind of angry cycle. You know, just things are not going well. He just can't figure himself out. And I'm having to deal with him a lot because he's close to my life. But how do we stay calm and present when we are having to deal with it, whether it's in a work situation or a circle of friends, that they're just going through this cycle of, and they're just not able to soothe themselves? How do we stay calm in those moments?
Yeah, that's a really important question because I don't think we think that way. I think we just react, and they mirror anger, so we get angry, or they mirror offense, and we mirror it back. So it's such an important question. And, you know, here's the thing. You could always start, this really is soothing, to tell yourself their anger or their upset, whatever they're feeling, their complaints, it's about them and not about me. You know, when I'm angry, that's about me, not the person I'm angry at. Because we, so if we don't take it personally, even if we're personally part of the problem, how they choose to react is theirs. And so that automatically, just that little bit of knowledge that, oh, okay, this anger is about them, not about me. And then when you go to talk to somebody like this, because you want to be helpful, and we tend to say the things that backfire, but the best thing you could do is name their feeling. Wow, you seem really upset, or, oh, you sound so disappointed. When you give them the feeling, a lot of people say, oh, no, I don't want to make it worse. If I present that they're being cranky, they're going to get more cranky. And it's just the opposite. You know, think about a can of soda and you're shaking it up and it's all shaken up. Would you open that up and just point it towards yourself? Probably not. That's how we are inside. So the moment you say that, name the feeling, they go, oh, somebody gets how I feel. So that's the first step.
Well, I like what you're saying. It's all about for the other person to be seen as is and not to be like, oh, you know, don't whitewash it or make it better. I just need to know that really this is pretty. This is how I feel, and then that automatically being witnessed to calms it down. I love that.
Does Marilyn does it make a difference? Like Julie's given this example of someone she knows, but does it make a difference in the workplace? If that happens in the workplace.
Well, you know, the thing in the workplace is maybe your coworker doesn't want you to say that they're upset or something. I mean, you can kind of feel it out, but here's what you don't do. You know, we tend to hear them being upset and we want to fix it fast. We want to make it stop. So we want to cut them off and fix it. And the problem with that is not until the bad feelings come out can the good flow in. So when they're venting and complaining, you could soothe yourself by saying, this is good. This is the part of the process for them to get back on track, is for them to get the bad out, and this isn't about me. I can be here. I can be grounded while they're doing that. And so they're not yelling at me. They're yelling at the problem in their life. and if you think you're the problem in their life, just move yourself emotionally to stand beside them and attack the problem together.
That's really so important. And I'm going to rat on you, Mom, a little bit, because you rat on me earlier.
I can.
In our book, The Clutterfly Effect, I talk about this story about how there was a situation in our lives where Mom just needed to complain a lot. And I kept trying different techniques, refocus, look at the bright side, what you focus on expands, let's not focus on this, yada, yada, yada. None of them were working. And then finally, Mom, you said, I need to vent this, and I don't know when it'll be done, but it'll be done. And then once she said that, and once I heard her, really heard her, and I wasn't trying to make her feel different, it did slowly change, and then that time passed.
Right.
And then it was like over. This part was just over. Like the release valve of some kind of steam, or, it's like as soon as the release valve is released enough steam, equilibrium could come back, and so
right.
forth.
Right, exactly. And if you have enough consciousness, you know. I mean, I knew what she was trying to do, but I just said, I have this, I'm not trying to prolong it, Julie. I just know that I will find my equilibrium, shortly. But and I appreciate you trying to short-circuit it, too, trying to circumvent the, the funk that I was in during that time.
Well, and you were aware enough to tell her that, because sometimes we don't even know. We're just in reactive mode when we're upset. So, and then anybody who tries to give you the platitudes, oh, life will get better, just give it a chance, you just want to smack them. I mean, I hate to say that, but there's it. It's sort of like turning on the shower in the morning. The water starts out cold and prickly, and then you give it a second, and then it gets warm. So don't feed the negative. Don't feed the positive. Don't try to force the positive. Just be present, and the other person immediately will start to calm down in the process of just relieving themselves of that venting.
Mm. Exactly. So in some ways, for us to be self-soothing, it really is about just not take what they say personal and not be the mirror to their anger in some sense.
And also sort of, like you said, Marilyn, to step into, like, well, how can we solve this together?
Mm-hmm. Or how can I be helpful to you today?
Perfect.
That's a great question, because then it's like, oh, you know what? Right now I just need somebody to just listen, and that might be all they need. And then you might have the energy vampire who is chronically complaining. And so then again, we don't want to feed the complaints. Sometimes we get into the drama with them. But it's just, listening quietly and then being solution-focused. Even asking, how would you like this, if we could solve this today, what would you like to see happen? Now you're moving their mind into another part of their brain, and they have to think about what they want instead of complaining about what they don't want.
Mm. Well, Marilyn, I think I need to say this to all our lovelies out there, because Marilyn is the second person today that has mentioned the word solution focus. You gotta be solution focused. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, so I'm taking it as a sign. Mm-hmm. And since I've said it, now that's three times for somebody. So I said, we tend to be problem focused, don't we? Oh, here's our problem. Let's focus on it. And now we switch it to, let's be solution focused. Let's focus on the solution. Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that. So I know you've been a business owner for over 20 years, and you coach people to break through their business and personal barriers. What's the most important thing we can do before a problem even presents itself?
Oh, I love that. Because if you think about it, will there ever be a time when an angry person will be in front of you? Probably. It's going to happen. So here's the thing. We can't predict what might go wrong. We can't predict what's going to be upsetting to somebody or what kind of difficult situation someone might be in. But what you can do is have a set of principles that you draw from no matter what's happening. And those principles can be your, I call it like my security blanket that I go, my go-to mode when anything upsetting or unexpected comes up, because we tend to go into fear mode. Here's somebody in there yelling at you, or they're somebody you care about is crying, and we want them to be happy, and we could get really reactive. So if you have a set of principles to pull from, and I'll give you an example of a simple principle, and it might be so simple it seems too simple, but listen before you talk. Really simple, really small, and if you're like one of my clients, he said, oh, God, Marilyn, that's just too simple. Are you kidding? I know how to listen, geez. it just sounds too simple. But, you know, he was in a workshop of mine, and then that very night his daughter totaled his car. And it was her fault, and nobody was hurt, but he was so angry. And he went to go pick her up thinking of all the things he's going to tell her when he sees her, right? And he remembered that from that day. Oh, yeah, Marilyn said, listen before you talk. Because if you keep on doing what you always do, you keep on getting what you always get. And the two of them were always so bullheaded with each other. So he just went in there. He didn't say a word. He just put his arms around her, and she cried, and he stayed quiet. And now here's where the magic happened. She started saying to him, I'm so sorry, Dad. I wasn't paying attention. This was my fault. I need to really pay attention when I'm on the road because people's lives are in my hand. And now I got a ticket. I'm going to pay for it. I'm going to pay for the damage. I'm so sorry. Like everything he was going to tell her, she was telling him. Like, oh, my God, you know. And it just hit him in the gut because, you know, here's this person he loves. And he wondered, how many times have I stepped on that? Because I just go in there with all my good advice and all my knowledge, and I railroad any opportunity for her to be responsible.
Wow, that's brilliant.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so really, and it was that awareness. It's something that simple, a simple principle that you go to.
It kind of, you know what, it makes me feel like when you have a mission statement, and, you know, you're sort of like going crazy and nuts, and all of a sudden you go, wait a minute, I have a mission statement. And you go back and you read it, and you go back to the basics that you remember, you know, all that stuff. And that's kind of feels like what you're saying here a little bit.
Oh, yeah, and at work, you know, people think that their job is their tasks. But if you have the statement that your job is customer service, one of the companies I interviewed for my book is a moving company, and when I talked to their people, all of them told me, so it was this entrenched, we're not a moving company that has good service. We're a customer service company that happens to move people. That is their vision.
Love that.
And I love that.
So it's a principle they live by, and it changes each and every employee's attitude going into the job.
You bet.
It just changes my attitude because all of a sudden it shifts your perspective and, like, I'm here for customer service. That just happens to
and,
people.
And you can I can just tell, like, if I see a younger person, how they handle me, you know, in their customer service, I pretty much can tell they're going to go places if they're in, you know, that they deliver good customer service. I notice their manager's going to notice. And, you know, like, it's just going to keep expanding. And then there's the other people that just, you know, barely are verbal, you know, when you're trying to deal with them.
Yeah, well, and it's a learning, you know, part of it is a learning. It's I notice when I train a lot of the young people straight out of college, they're not necessarily used to having that face-to-face confrontation. So it can take a little while. It's a little shell-shocking at first to get underneath the idea that you don't react. You pause, breathe deep, and respond. Choose your response. And that moment you take that pause is where the soothing could be. That's where you could tell yourself all the things you need to, that, you know, that you'd like them to do or that them to be, but you give it to yourself. And one thing that's perfect I just want to share here is because I think a lot of us go into pity party mode. Where it's like, this shouldn't be happening. They shouldn't be doing this to me. Poor me, this is awful, why do I have to, you know, that whole, and it kind of feels good because you're kind of giving yourself that whole little pity party inside. But I don't know about you, but when I pity myself, I start to feel pitiful. So it backfires, you know, it doesn't feel good.
Right.
So true. It's so true.
Well, you know, and at pity party, you're usually the only one around that can come that's invited because everybody said, not coming. Sorry, I don't know.
Yeah, really.
So you're like, I am so pitiful. Yeah, nobody came to my pity party. I'm so pitiful. I love that. So is there any other examples you want to share with us that, you know, how we could self-soothe during a workplace challenge? I know we've talked about a few things about listening. You know, is there anything else that we can really do to self-soothe during a workplace challenge?
Yeah, this is a big one. In the moment, ask yourself, what am I feeling? Because just like we listen to their feelings, to soothe yourself, you need to know how you're feeling. Otherwise, what you're going to do is you're going to push it down into your stomach and get an ulcer, or you're going to push it down into your back and get a real tight backache, or you're going to push it into your head and get that pounding headache. So rather than stuffing it or pushing it down, ask yourself, how am I feeling? Because the moment you say, I'm feeling threatened, the part of you that's the watcher, the part of you that observes you as you do things, gives you that comfort. Oh, so what you're needing is a little compassion. Let me give myself some compassion right now. And all of a sudden, you just took care of yourself. You just soothed yourself because you were aware of how you felt. And then you can redirect. And this happened to me. I got a phone call from a woman who wanted to hire me. She wanted me to come out and train her staff, and she spent about 45 minutes on the phone with me. I was getting excited, and we were talking, and then as soon as I got into details, she happened to mention, well, by the way, I don't have a budget. And so there was that moment of I'm thinking, she just spent 45 minutes wanting a free talk. What does she want me to drive 3 hours to her location? You know, I could have gone into reactive mode. And I gave myself a moment to notice I was feeling taken advantage of in that moment. I soothed myself, went on to a principle, which was, how do I want to show up in this situation? And so I was able then to not take it personally and say, well, it sounds like you need a free speaker. Here's some ideas for free speakers. There's Toastmasters groups in every community. There's, you know, and I did a few brainstorming ideas about where she could get free support. Mm-hmm. And she was thrilled. She linked me in. And you never know where that will take. You know, you don't know who she knows or when she has a budget in the future. Instead of being snarky with her, I soothed myself so I could be great with her.
You did, and you did. That was brilliant, by the way.
Exactly.
Yeah. A lot of practice.
Start giving her some ideas.
Yeah. So, you know, right now I just want to say to everybody, we can go to, you know, MarilynSuttle.com and also WhoYourGladys.com to pick up her book, Who's Your Gladys? I love it. How to Turn Even the Most Difficult Customer into Your Biggest Fan. And if you buy her book, I think you've still got some gifts that people can get from buying the book. Is that true?
Well, I'll tell you what, because usually at this point the book, the gifts are over, but I'm going to extend it for your people if they go to the site, because it says that those gifts end May, I think the end of May. But I'm going to let anybody from your group that goes, I'm just for the next 2 days, well, I'll say for the next week, if we get we're going to let you have the gifts. So you just go to the Who's Your Gladys site and click on the Who's Your Gladys book.
Oh, thank you so much.
She's a doll baby.
She is a doll baby. Yeah. She always gives. And I just,
she's so generous.
Yes. So what's one last tip you can share with us today about self-soothing, which is so important in these situations?
Okay, here's a great tip. Consider yourself in your own laboratory. Wherever you go, consider it like an experiment. Because when you're experimenting, you're curious. And so the moment you think, this is a laboratory, we're just trying out some things here, this person's upset, I wonder how I'll handle it, all of a sudden, it's like there's two of you. You know, have you ever heard people say, I can't stand myself right now, or I'm so proud of myself? There's the I and then there's the myself. So let the I watch what yourself is doing. And then it almost becomes fun. It's almost like, I hope there's a challenging person so I could see how I handle myself. It becomes fun.
I love it. So just, you know, upgrade to curiosity.
Mm-hmm. Huge shifter.
Yes. I love it because there are times when just changing your mindset about that, changing that to a principle about working, having your life as a laboratory, it makes everything you try new. Less like a failure when you fail, you know.
Oh, right. Look at how many times Edison was in his laboratory trying to make a light bulb. I mean, it just gives you so much permission to try and fail and try again.
Yes, exactly.
I'm a scientist. That's what I'm supposed to do.
Not take it personally.
Exactly.
Step inside, become a, what'd you say, Julie, solution solver? What'd you say today?
Solution focused.
Solution focused.
So many times we're problem focused, and we know that very well, because then the problem just gets bigger. But if we go, well, what's the solution here? And then we focus on the solution, and that's that's a great way. And I'm saying I've heard that several times, so I'm like, okay, you know, when you hear that phrase, that pays,
mm-hmm.
take notice. So Marilyn brought that back up. So thank you so much, Marilyn.
Mm-hmm.
And you can
oh,
go to MarilynSuttle.com. You're an amazing coach, by the way, too, because I can just hear in your voice
yes.
how supportive and, I'm going to say, probably a little kick butt, like, hey, let's get going. Let's
I'm kind of accountable to help people
yes.
be accountable in a very gentle way.
Yes,
exactly.
There you go.
Exactly.
There you go. I love that. Yeah, accountable in a very gentle way. It's like, wow, you know, I just got my butt kicked by Marilyn, and you know what? I didn't even know about it. I didn't even feel it. that's the subtle.
That's it.
That's how subtle she is.
That's Marilyn's subtle shift.
That's right.
Exactly. And so, thank you so much, Marilyn. And you can go to, her website, Marilyn Suttle, and HoosierGladys.com to get the book as well.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much, Marilyn. Have a great, great night.
Oh, thank you. I love what you guys are up to.
Thank you, Marilyn.
So much.
It's been a pleasure.
Ah. What a great, great two interviews. Awesome. I just love Marilyn Suttle. I love her. She's great.
She's smart. She's got a great heart.
Well, I'm going to say one quick story. I didn't want to, you know, I know that, I think she was trained by Jack Canfield. I also know that she has he quotes her, gets a little testimony about her book. I love Jack Canfield. He's just a great coach. And she reminds me of him because I asked Jack Canfield a question. And instead of giving me one answer, he gave me three.
That's right.
And she did the same thing. I asked her a question. She gave me three answers.
Yes.
And I felt like that. I love it when people go for expansion.
Me too.
It's like they want to fill the space more. It's
yes.
like, I'll help you. And I'll help you again.
Yeah.
And I'll help you again.
Yeah.
And it was like,
that's that generous heart that I love. And
I think
try
it's
the model
that.
For the new paradigm.
I try and do it with
everybody.
Hey, our song's playing at. Everyone, have a great day. Come follow us at thecutterflyeffect.com. Everybody needs
a good girlfriend.
Everybody needs a good girlfriend to make the wrong seem right.
Yeah, you got it. Good.
Have a great night, everyone.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.